start having fun.
Yeah, Megan, are we allowed to have fun now?
We can have fun now.
All right, thank you.
Thank you for joining us in the Dorkadia podcast. This is Megan Spurr.
Hannah Goldberg-Craig.
Charles Spurr.
Okay, we can have fun now because I have been making Charles and Hannah not have fun talking about the Star Wars trailer. So this is the final trailer for episode 9.
The Rise of Skywalker.
Yes. Okay, so...
came out on Monday. We've been like almost a week without talking about it to each other, so...
I have to say... two things that struck me. I never thought, ever, in my wildest fantasies, did I ever think that C-3PO was going to say something that was going to make me emotional. You know, his line of taking one last look at my friends. Oh, my God. That's just a punch in the feels. And then the music, where you have the iconic Star Wars theme song, only done in very major chords. And very hopeful, and that was different than I think I've ever heard it. That was just really cool. Sad that it was also done at the same time while they're riding in on maybe horses?
Yeah, I don't, the weird mounted sequence, I don't understand.
I'm gonna let that one go, but the music seemed really cool.
Is that similar to those things that were in Last Jedi?
No, they're not. That's really... the problem, isn't it? Like, it's not even a callback to the creatures from Last Jedi. It's new creatures! We're gonna introduce some new mounted creatures.
To be fair, those ones in Last Jedi did not need to exist.
Right, but if they already exist, why not use them again?
We make them at least somewhat useful.
Right, like, they fulfill the same purpose, so why make an entirely new creature?
I mean, we sat through that in 4D, just like... so, you know, I want to get something for that.
Sorry, I had to sit through that movie at all. I did not care for that movie. I agree with you about the C-3PO thing. The thing that really freaks me out there is that Anthony Daniels, the C-3PO actor, has been such a huge part of Star Wars fandom since, well, like, since Star Wars was not what it is today, right?
Yeah.
Like, Star Wars, like, has gone fully and completely mainstream, right? But when we were kids... it was a nerdy movie that people didn't really talk about too much anymore. Like, being super into Star Wars was weird because it's like, oh, that's like the movie from like the late 70s into the 80s. And like, you know, it's 15, 20 years later. Like, why are you still super into this?
Why are you into cowboys in space?
Exactly. Or wizards in space.
Yeah.
Like, why is that a thing? And like, I remember his column from the Star Wars magazine that I used to be subscribed to. And like, he was at every convention and like, he's done so much there. That I swear to God, that sounded like a farewell line. If they kill off C-3PO, I'm a riot. Like, we have already lost both in a meta sense of people that we love and characters that we love. I can't take too much more. So don't fucking do this to me.
I don't think I can see this movie with you, Hannah.
It's gonna be a problem.
Reddit was saying, you know, him saying, taking one last look, sir, at my friends. He was like, he was talking about us, like the audience, not just them. And I was like, oh God.
I can't handle that either. None of this is, I'm not gonna be able to handle this movie. I don't think we can, I think you're right in that we can't go see it together because I think we're gonna be both such a giant bundle of emotions that we're just gonna be like bawling.
Yeah.
And then each one of us is gonna make it worse for the
other
one.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
And then everybody's gonna
I think we can see it separately. And then we need to see it together.
I think you're right. When we see it together, it needs to be like, oh,
it can
like,
be more cathartic, and we know what's happening.
Like,
right?
On a matinee day when, like, nobody else is in the theater, so we can just, like, sob to our heart's content.
Yeah, uh-huh.
So look, Charles. I still get really teary whenever the Lucasville logo shows up, because I remember seeing the special editions in theaters, which, yeah, okay, the special editions did a lot of real dumb shit, but for me... as of somebody born in 86, like, that was the first Star Wars movie I saw on a big screen. Like, that was the first time I got to see that, and it was such a huge, important thing. And I was, like, maybe 11, I think, for the first special edition release. Yeah, I think I was 11.
I forgot you're 12, yes. Yeah.
Thank you. People at my work this week were talking about being still in high school when I was at, like, my third job. And I thank you for reminding me that you're old and that you're old. It makes me feel so much better. I still get very teary when I see the Lucasfilm logo because that's immediately the first thing I think of. I remember seeing it 11, and I remember crying at 11, too, so. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because I don't know if I was taken to the theater for Empire, because that was 80, right? First 80. One was 77, I thought Empire was 80, and then Return of the Jedi was 84?
I thought it was 85, and I thought that Empire was 82. No, I think that's too long of a gap.
Yeah.
I think you're right, the Empire might have been 80.
I know I saw Return of the Jedi in the theaters. I don't think I was actually taken to go see Empire, but...
Because I feel like... Megan, are you looking it up? Because I feel like Jedi came out when I was alive, but way too young, but maybe not.
New Hope in 77, Empire Strikes Back in 80, and Return of the Jedi in 83.
83? Okay.
Wow, that's much earlier than I thought it was. I was thinking it was 86 or... No, okay. Yeah, 3 years before I was even born.
Like, I was five, so, you know, it wasn't really...
If I was taken to see Return of the Jedi, I was two. So, I don't. Yeah.
Sorry, New Dorkadia intern just headbutted me on the back of the head, right? And my head, like, went forward. This cat is a lot of cat.
He is, like, both of the previous interns.
Is he Dorkadia intern four?
Yeah, he's four.
Yep.
We're going to actually have to call them by name eventually. Yeah. there have been enough now.
Yep, we have interns three and four.
And five, but I don't know if we'll ever...
I think that's like an intern in waiting, maybe.
Five is a creature of the mist and will materialize when he feels like it.
Yes.
You really dig the breed name you belong
to. Yeah, I really do. I think it's just because of the coloring is why they call him that, but he's just...
I mean, it's a German thing. Like, yeah. Bring in the Nibelung.
Anyway, Star Wars.
Cats also. Yeah.
Yes. I am way looking forward to this. There's so many small things that we saw. I really dig Kylo walking out of the waves, the readjustment of his lightsaber.
So we agree that that is, if not the moon of Endor we're familiar with, it is a related thing, and that's the ruins of Death Star 2, right? That they're on. Like, that's not just me.
I don't know.
Potentially,
because there's, I really believe... Given the previous trailers that we saw, there's going to be a trial that Rey goes through, much like how Luke had to fight, you know, Darth Vader and see himself. When we saw the evil Rey with the amazing, cool lightsaber, I think that
Temple Guard saber. That, yeah.
But I'm thinking that's where we're going to actually see Palpatine and maybe that. So I don't know. I don't know how much of that is, do I think might be part of a trial versus reality.
Yeah, I think it's definitely clear that there is some type of dream trial, you know, force vision sequence. I'm a little bit annoyed that they're using that in the marketing so heavily, because like from the first trailer, it was like, oh, Rey's gonna go evil. No, it's very clear from the other movies, from what, like, the build-up. It's pretty obvious what that means.
That's actually probably about as much as we're even going to see in the film itself.
I would not be surprised.
Yeah.
Like, that was the whole sequence.
Yeah.
So and then like, she wakes up going,
exactly. Yeah. Yes. So it was a little annoying. I don't know. There seems to be a lot that takes place in these, like, Death Star ruins. So it's either going to be a super extended sequence or it's actually something in reality.
I think the Death Star, given the nature of that explosion, could have been scattered to a number of places throughout the universe. Like, as far as those things may have traveled in 30 years, right?
I guess. I don't know, though, because, like, did you ever... Did you remember the fan theory about the Holocaust of Endor or the Endor Holocaust?
No.
Oh my god, it was a super huge fan theory back in, like, early internet fandom days. So the idea is that somebody did, like, a bunch of calculations with, like, escape velocities and, like, orbits and all of this shit, and came up with this very intense theory that said that by destroying the Death Star, they also have potentially destroyed a significant portion of the planet that Ewoks live on, the moon that the Ewoks live on, because the Death Star was not so far away that a lot of that wouldn't have eventually come into the orbit and just, like, basically bombarded it from space.
Oh, okay, so that was the same argument, if I remember correctly, that was the argument that I read from freaking Mallrats. Or was it Mallrats or was it Clerks?
I don't think it was.
When they have the...
I don't think it was Clerks, but it might have been a Mallrats. It seems like something that would have been a Mallrats.
About whether, you know, the...
Well, theirs was all about, like, how many contractors there were on the second Death Star. Oh, yeah. Rushing to get that done.
But then right, but that was bullshit, because the second Death Star and the first Death Star were all constructed by slaves. So, like, I it was a funny argument in the context of the movie, but, like, there's actually a lore.
What I more meant that fandom then took that and grew with it. Of a, like... Okay, but if they were wrong, let's look at this and see what, like, all the ways in which, you know, all of the, not just the Jedi, but, you know, everybody...
I think it's the same thing that fandoms have done for ages untold, which is just figure out, like, the saddest or, like, weirdest outcome of a situation. Mm-hmm. But I do like the idea that, like, the parts of the Death Star, like, landed on somewhere and, like, seriously fucked up the place that they landed on. Just that's kind of interesting.
Yeah, but, yeah, Endor's a gas... God, I hate the way they decided to make... So the system is Endor, in which the largest planet is a gas giant named Endor.
Right.
Yep.
Around which the largest moon is the forest moon, which is also sometimes called Endor.
Yes, yes. It is the forest moon of Endor, if you really get down to it.
Which could just mean that its name is Endor.
Yeah.
Or the forest moon, or the moon of Endor.
Yeah.
It's just easiest to say where the Ewoks live.
Right. Yeah, true.
So, the forest moon is the largest of 9 moons that orbit that gas giant. So, yeah, it could be on one of the other moons. Mm-hmm. Nothing saying they don't have an oceanic moon.
Yeah. Or just a moon with an ocean. Yeah.
Each moon is just a biosphere.
I mean, that's very Star Wars-y. That's very Star Wars-y.
Okay, Charles, can you walk me through the dagger sequence that you were discussing?
Okay, so the weird one that takes place in retro-futuristic white room with Rey and Kylo destroying what appears to be maybe a statue or a pedestal of some sort.
To me, it looks like the plinth that Kylo Ren had Vader's broken helmet on.
Sure.
It looks similar to that. Like, it's, I think, about the same height, and what at the top of it looks like is Vader's broken helm.
Which could then lead this to being a vision for Kylo himself killing his own past. But when both of them strike through with their lightsabers, on the follow-through, Rey is holding a dagger in her left hand. It's not a laser dagger, just a dagger.
Yeah, it's not a lightsaber, it's not a vibro dagger. Like, it is a, like, fantasy, like, something I'm playing with in WoW Classic right now.
Somebody spray-painted a Klingon dagger, and she's...
Yeah.
So, I've been seeing a lot of people... A lot. I've seen some theories online about what that dagger is, and as nice as it would be to be true, I just don't see it happening. People are saying that they think it might be the dagger of Mortis.
No.
Because really? The dagger of Mortis has the power to kill an immortal being, which they maybe think Palpatine could be.
Remind me where the dagger of Mortis is from, because that sounds familiar, but my encyclopedic knowledge is not as complete as I would prefer.
Back in the Clone Wars animated series, who ended up on the planet? It was Obi-Wan, Anakin, Ahsoka, but somebody else ended up there, was it?
No.
I thought somebody dark ended up there. Okay, maybe not.
No, I think it was just the three of them.
Just the three of them, okay. They end up on the planet of Mortis, the original Force wielders.
Okay.
So you have the father, the son, and the daughter. And each one of them embodies a certain thing. The daughter is the light, the son is the dark, and the father is the gray entity.
Sure.
More or less, that keeps them in balance. The son had a dagger that could kill an immortal being, and it was the dagger of Mortis, and eventually Obi-Wan comes into possession of it in order to free them from this planet. And yeah. So, first of all, it doesn't look anywhere close to the dagger of Mortis, because that was about the size of Obi-Wan's chest.
Yeah.
Still.
Also, call out to watch that particular arc. It's actually quite fascinating to see the argument between what happens with, you know, a young Anakin who is at this time still being very courted by the dark side. And, you know, as the people watching it, that he's going to obviously be Darth Vader, but also, like, his relationship with Padme and the fact that, like, all of these things are happening to him. And so you start seeing how the embodiment of the Force reacts to him and how it's a really interesting arc. I highly recommend it.
We see Mortis again later in Rebels on a mural towards the end. You see the three characters, and they lead Ezra into the space between worlds, like the wolves then run off, and where he goes to save Ahsoka from the temple where she's fighting Vader.
Right. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
he pulls her out of time and space. So it's a continuing theme in the animated series, but man, I do not see them just like dropping that into a film.
No, I think that the films, if they made the requirement to you to have watched all of this other, you know, tertiary media, I think that they would lose so many people. And I think that that's asking too much. I think there's a lot of people who didn't even catch the Mortis tie-in in Rebels, let alone the people that may have seen it in Clone Wars. So I think that if you then dropped in this dagger without giving any sort of context, or if you try to give in context, that it would take half the film to give context to that. So I just don't see it.
I don't know if it would, because, like, you just gave me perfect context with a fairly short explanation, and it's not like exposition isn't a thing that happens in Star Wars.
Yeah.
I mean, if Rey talks about it as being something that's in one of the books she took from the tree.
Yeah, maybe. I hope it isn't. As much as I love the animated series, I think that, honestly, some of the stuff that's happened in Clone Wars and Rebels is I love more than the actual Star Wars films, but I don't think that it makes sense in the world that they have set up right now, right? This fight with Rey and with Ben. I don't see it.
I just don't see them pulling anything major from any outside source material is really the big thing. Yeah. Like, I think there's room for that in, like, maybe the spinoff movies, right? Like, how they pull characters from the comics into the Han Solo movie, right?
Yeah.
Like, that I can see, but for the, not just a main entry, but the supposedly the last main entry.
Yep.
I have a hard time seeing it. That being said, it's super weird. It's a very strange, it's a very strange object to have. And I think one of the big things I hope is that they don't try to introduce too much more new.
Yeah.
Instead, they focus on celebrating what already exists and tying up plot lines in, like, a very... Because that was one of the things I didn't like about Last Jedi was, like, they were so, like, we've got all these different storylines. Like, the cast is pulled apart so that the characters we like to see interacting aren't really interacting. There's new characters that are brought in, and, like, I like Rose. Like, I have no problem with Rose as a character, and, like, the Admiral What's-Her-Face was fine, but it was a bad time to introduce both of them.
She's such a good character in the books, too.
I know, and that's, like, just, it's such a shitty time to introduce them when you're literally halfway through the end of a thing. Those characters don't get a chance to shine without supplanting characters that you already like a lot. Like, yeah. I like Rose, but I want to see Rose interact with Rey and Finn, and I want to see Rey and Finn be able to interact more. Like, these characters that I love from Force Awakens, I want to see them do more stuff together, and then they don't get to.
Well, I'm hoping to see, we see them on screen now.
Yes.
So, here's to hoping.
Yeah.
Also,
more female characters interacting with each other in Star Wars, just in general.
In general, it'd be great. Speaking of general, oh man, when at the very end, when it's The Force Will Be With You, and it's Leia saying always at the end, I just,
I know.
Yeah,
me too.
There's so many feels.
We're gonna start now, and it's still like a month or more until this movie comes. Like, we are...
Oh, I'm a mess already.
No.
I'm so excited for this film. I'm going to see it a zillion times over.
I'm sure.
Yep, absolutely.
Yeah, I'm going to enjoy the little cameo things that happen, but yeah, I think we're going to...
I think I'm going to be two states away from you, but seeing it half hour...
You're seeing it a half hour later than me, yes.
Yeah, so...
My showing starts at 6:30,
exactly.
And yours is at 7 or something like that.
Yep, so after the film is over, do not text me. I'm going to take my watch off. I'm going to, like...
I was
going to
say, maybe you should just take your fucking watch off!
Yes. Anyway, so Star Wars, I'm really, 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 really excited by that. Yeah.
Have you seen any other interesting... Because before that podcast, Charles was asking me if I had looked into any fan theories about what's in the trailer, and I had just done a very general kind of, like, stuff I skimmed headlines on. But have you seen anything else that you thought was particularly interesting?
I mean, of course, people talked about the ghost showing up in the ship sequence where, like, all the Resistance ships are showing up.
The ghost, of course, being from Rebels.
Yes. Yeah. And...
Oh, gosh.
Hera's probably far too old to... still be piloting a ship.
Would it be Hera? Would it be her son?
It would probably be her son taking over.
Jason. Jason. Sorry, I was getting...
It's the same name as Solo's son.
J-A-C-E-N?
Yeah. No, J-A-Y-C-E-N.
Ah, okay.
Yeah.
How long do Twi'lek live? Like,
I looked this up on a Wikipedia thing, and they didn't really give much of an answer. It's roughly the same as humans.
Oh, okay. So she would be.
So she was already an adult, like
30 years ago.
Yeah, prior to the battle.
Yeah.
Of Yavin. So
she's a senior citizen.
Yeah, she is older than any of the other main story characters.
Yeah, because when she meets Leia, Leia's a teenager.
Yes,
Leia's so like she'd probably 14, she could be 10, 15 years older than Leia. Yeah, but
if not a little more even.
But that could also, you know, not everything. I mean, that she could still, it could be.
I mean, yeah, like this is, when you think about it, like we're a little more aimed at like see like younger heroes and stuff like that. But this is a science fiction based, this is science fiction fantasy, right? Like there's nothing saying that like, you know, senior folks don't have, like, I mean, their healthcare is probably really good.
Yeah. Except they're part of the rebellion, so
their healthcare is probably really. But wasn't her dad like loaded though? She came from
her father had been the head of the resistance on their planet,
right?
And yeah, Ryloth has not been prosperous.
That's right.
By the way, that's one of the cool things that you can buy when you're at Disneyland. Oh, yeah. So there's a whole episode of her trying to take back from Thrawn. It's like the this. I don't know what it's called.
I forgot what it's called, but it's
a piece of her family history. It looks like a T and it has these like little wooden pieces and stuff. Anyways, you can actually buy that and have that art in your house. It was pretty cool.
I'm surprised you didn't.
You know, I live in something that's slightly larger than a good sized closet.
Do I look like I'm blue?
I definitely
that doesn't
have
go
to
on a shelf.
Yeah,
I was gonna say you have wall space.
I do.
If you want to get out a really tall ladder,
at a certain point, you have to wonder when you were buying dust collectors. But
fair.
Bought a lightsaber. I made a lightsaber, that is. Oh, I'm very excited. It's gonna go to my office, my new office. I'm very excited.
Nice.
Yeah.
Are you an actual office of your own?
Pretty sure. So. I guess I can actually say that.
Dream.
Yeah, I can actually say this now that we're on a recording. So I just accepted a full-time position. I will be working directly on the Xbox services team. So I'm now officially a marketing manager, specifically a community manager for Xbox Game Pass and Project X Cloud. So I'm very excited and terrified all at the same time. Yeah.
We should at some point in time, probably on mic, and maybe we need to talk about this a little bit off mic, have a conversation about what that means of, like, how we talk about Xbox and Microsoft and, like, just being very transparent to our listeners.
Yeah. I am happy to have that conversation. I'm very clear about what are my opinions versus what is everything with work, right? So the line is I'm not allowed to speculate on anything. Totally. And so if there's ever anything, I will not hint at anything that may or may not be. And I'm not going to artificially sell a product. I have my opinions. I have always said that I think Game Pass is pretty awesome for those people that want to try a whole bunch of games, and you can get a bunch of things that you want to try and then, or not, but it's a good price point for that. If you want to get games that are not on Xbox, you want to go play it on a Switch, you want to go play on a PlayStation, you want to play on your PC, freaking do that. I will be the first one to celebrate that. I own all of these things.
You are wearing an Untitled Goose Game shirt right now.
I am. I absolutely am.
Well, and I also think it's important to say, like, this doesn't mean that we will avoid saying our opinions if something negative happens.
Yeah.
Or, like, if we have a negative review of something, right? Like, we're not gonna... we don't mention it, it's not because we're, like, towing a company line or something like that. It's because it just didn't come up or something like that, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
This does not change how things operate.
Well, and we've known that I've worked for Xbox for a number of years, right? I've been worked on a managed service as a contract for the past couple of years. So that we've all kind of skirted around that, but that's where I've been for the past few years. Yeah. So this is now just, it changes the color of my badge. That's about it.
I just want to make sure that we're not doing anything that risks your fucking rad awesome job, but also, yeah. I don't think journalistic integrity is the phrase for us, but our transparency about our opinions.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
No, that's fair. And, you know, ultimately I'll say, number one, my first gaming instinct is still on PC.
Well, you can say that about a Game Pass on PC.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, I was so happy when we launched Game Pass for PC because I have had such imposter syndrome working for Xbox because I'm like, I don't know how to do this on a controller. I don't game on a controller. I remember the game, the biggest game that has come out in ages I never played. I did not play Skyrim when it came out because I had two broken arms. And at the time, I could not play on a keyboard and mouse because I couldn't comfortably set my arms that way. And so by the time I was finally able to be a little bit more relaxed and everyone had played the game forever and I just didn't get into it. But so
at now the everyone time, liked it and Megan was like, oh, well, fuck you guys and your things you like.
Oh, I know. No, I'm a... the worst fucking hipster.
I was going to take the tack of, you really didn't miss that much. It's very overhyped.
But, I mean, like, it's something that I probably should have experienced for
at it least. Was a moment in gaming with a capital M, it's true.
And I missed that because I was like, no, I can't play. I tried. I sat down and I tried to play on a controller. And I'm like, this is awful. I really want to be able to look in a different direction and move. And I don't like this on a controller. It's just not my jam, so.
I think I can empathize with that in that I didn't start gaming well until I was an adult. So when people talk about retro games, like, there are things that I have really fond memories of because, like, I played them at friends' places or I, like, borrowed them from a boyfriend or something like that. But I would never have considered myself a gamer until my 20s. Well, early 20s, but still. And so, like, when people talk about, like, you know, these important childhood experiences and stuff like that, I was like, I don't play that. I don't share that, right? Like, I love the N64 because I remember going to Blockbuster and playing Mario 64 for hours in Blockbuster. But that's about it, you know? Yeah. So, yeah, I think it's imposter syndrome in gaming. We've talked about it before. It's absolutely a thing.
Yeah.
That being said, I'm also super glad the Game Pass is on PC just because I think it's a cool product. And yeah. I like seeing that on PC.
I'll be happier when it works better.
See, we'll be honest. We'll be honest.
We'll be honest. I launched this product at E3 and I worked probably 18-hour days for a month straight, probably.
Yeah, it was crazy.
Yeah, it was bonkers. Glad it's working better now. Anyways, so that is officially my new job. Nothing changes. Ultimately, everything that I say is my opinion. If it is not my opinion, if it is the company opinion, it is on Xbox Wire under my actual name, you know, and you'll see it as community lead for Xbox Game Pass. And so that's where you'll find those moments. But everything else that I say here or on Twitter is my personal opinions. And I'll stick with that because they probably don't care as much as I do about cat selfies. Star Wars. Well, no, they do care about Star Wars. That's true. But yes.
Fallen Order.
Yeah. Oh, I'm excited for Fallen Order. Have you seen much about it?
Yeah, a little bit.
I'm really interested. I think that, you know, again, introducing a new character that is... Man, everyone's going to introduce a new character. It's going to happen in all the series. I mean, like, Mandalorian, I'm excited to see.
I'm actually really excited for the Mandalorian.
So I think that there's a lot of cool stuff that people can still do in this universe, even though we're ending the Skywalker saga. And I'm super okay with that. So
you mean the C-3PO saga?
Yeah. Well, I mean, arguably it's the R2-D2 saga.
R2's around, but Anakin built C-3PO, so it's all about C-3PO. Which, by the way, bringing it back to fan theories, one of the things that people are theorizing is that they're basically doing a system restore on C-3PO to get some information that Anakin would have had.
Yeah, there was definitely a part of me that was really excited about that idea because it would be very cool to actually be able to have somebody, a character that was there in the first person and be able to say, like, this is what these people were like, especially if Rey does end up being related somehow. Or even just to Ben, right? Like, this is, you know, you want to know all this fucking stuff about Darth Vader or you want to idolize Darth Vader so much. I know him when he was a little boy they called Annie.
Yeah.
Right? Like, you know, I knew him when he was a little slave boy, and that would be super interesting, but if it comes at the cost of C-3PO, I don't know about that. That makes me sad.
I think the idea is that it comes at the cost of him knowing all the people he knows now.
Exactly! That's the cost of him! Your experiences make you who you are!
Yeah. Yeah.
Woof. Woof. Star Wars, man.
I'm real excited.
Yep. I'm prepared to cry a lot.
So speaking of other things that make us cry.
I was going to make that transition myself.
What a great transition there. Yeah.
Right? Sea of Solitude.
Let's talk a little bit about Sea of Solitude.
Oof.
Yeah, so Sea of Solitude is about a person going on an emotional journey and just, like, exploring their feelings and I don't know that I would necessarily say, like, mental illness, but certainly, like, mental issues where you're dealing with, like, depression, loneliness. And it's all about going through that journey and coming out the other side. So, like, that's what you're on, and that's what you're signed up for when you play this game. It's like a 5-hour game, like, it's, but it's, it'll really hit home for people who have any kind of issues with depression, anxiety, feelings of, like, self-doubt. The world itself is built up around the idea that when you are lonely or depressed, that you become a monster, which is just great symbolism. Like, the idea that you feel different, that you feel apart, and that you know something is wrong and you want to fix it.
You feel other, so you become other.
Yes. And the character, like, at the beginning, just is screaming, change me. She doesn't want to be this anymore. Mm-hmm. It's a game that deals with motives of light and dark. The dark being the depression. The light being where you feel okay, but still she remains a monster. So she's just a monster walking in the light. Man, so much symbolism. It's so on point. You encounter the first monster is like this just being in a shell that's yelling at you. And it's self-doubt.
I thought it was more self-loathing than self-doubt.
There is some self-loathing. Yeah. Because it's yelling at you how you're useless. You only think of yourself. You're lazy. You never help anyone. And that's also not the impression that the character has of themselves. So it's interesting to watch her try and come up against that and fight against that. There's another major monster that, like, follows through the rest of the game that is right after that, which is a large fish-style creature, because you are navigating what's basically a drowned city.
And which is based on Berlin, correct?
Yes.
Yes.
Although she does say it reminds her of Venice. Mm-hmm. Again, of just Sunken City, but the city layout and everything is actually based on Berlin.
Because this is from a German studio.
Yep.
So most of the time you're navigating around on a boat, but there are times when you have to swim from place to place, and there's this giant fish monster. It lives in the dark, and it continually tries to tempt you to come dive into the darkness. And tells you how much nicer it'll be when you just give in and dive into the depths, and you won't have to worry anymore.
Have you tried doing that?
Oh, yeah, yeah. It'll just eat you.
Oh, it just eats you immediately?
You die.
Mm-hmm. Which is kind of what I feel like it's a metaphor for.
Yes.
Yeah. Kinda.
Uh-huh.
It could also be a metaphor for temptation, bad decisions, like
taking the easy way out of things.
Sure. Yeah. Giving into things that you know are wrong, but continue to have, like, that soothing voice calling you to it.
Yeah.
But, no, it's definitely a suicide metaphor.
Yeah.
Like, there's that's constantly, like, swimming around and gnawing at you from the edges. God, it's such a good story.
So, I would compare this a bit to if you played That Dragon Cancer. So, both artistically, it is kind of that same, similar art style. And also that same emotional journey. This is something that is pointedly making references to emotional moments and things that is designed to make you feel something. It hits home hard, especially for people who have gone through that. I will say, I've not played the whole game, so I've probably played about an hour and a half, maybe 2 hours worth of this game so far. Charles has played the whole thing. There are some mechanics in it that I don't care for as much. I would say things that I played in That Dragon Cancer, they changed constantly based off of what the message was trying to tell you, right? Like, there are moments of things that I didn't understand, and then it wasn't until later I realized that was the point, that there is no roadmap on cancer, and so therefore you're constantly feeling lost and don't know where to go, don't know where you started, and you don't know what the finish line is. With depression, the monster in the sea that you're constantly trying to avoid, like, I get that metaphor, but I also actually don't really care about the mechanic of constantly waiting for it to be on the other side of the map, just far enough away for you to swim to the next island so it doesn't get you. Like, I get it, but I would love to have seen, like, a different mechanic done to that. I don't really care as much about stealth mechanics and the constant, if you didn't do this right this time, then you failed and you have to start again. So I don't like that game mechanic as much. That's not to say that it's bad in any way. It's, this one hasn't been a home run for me, but I absolutely love a game that is still going to walk you through those emotional moments and make you feel something and make you think hard about it. Obviously, it's hard for me as somebody that, you know, I wear my heart on my sleeve. I'm very open about my depression and anxiety and medication for it and everything that I go through. So I get that. I don't think that's actually been my issue with this game. So it's, I don't know, it's interesting.
Did the shell monster kind of give that imposter syndrome feeling?
By imposter syndrome, you mean just like daily feeling? I mean, that's not... Charles, though, my imposter syndrome is different. That's just daily voice.
Yeah, sure.
That's just a, you know, you're not good enough. You are, they're going to figure you out. This is, you know,
yeah.
you're just making it up as you go. You know, all of those things. Like, those are voices that I hear daily. And I think a lot of us do. I'm not unique in that. I actually more don't understand the idea of being able to confront that monster and turn it off. Right, like that doesn't stop. So maybe a little bit too much into my head there. Hey, everybody, hi, hi.
So, and I'm just saying this based off of, this is not the part of the game that I saw played. I saw we did a little bit later on in the game that I watched Charles and Megan play through. But to that point, just kind of listening to you both describe that section, that doesn't, the monster saying those things absolutely resonates with me. Like 3 billion percent.
Oh, yeah.
The idea of confronting it and turning it off does not resonate with me because that's not how it works. Like, you don't, like, and we've all been in therapy. We know this, right? Therapy is not about, or self-betterment or helping yourself is not about these big dramatic gestures. Like, you know, you see like, oh, you had such a big breakthrough today on like a TV show or something like that. That's not how it works. It's tiny increments forward. And a lot of the times it's all huge slap back. And then, you know, you crawl and claw forward for every new inch. So that voice, it's never about confronting that voice and turning it off. It's about reprogramming that voice and it's about challenging that voice. And when it says nobody likes you, you have to confront that voice with, no, here's all the evidence that people do like me. You know, I got invited to this thing. People say hi to me. I have friends. And it's reprogramming that voice. But from what I understand and kind of what Charles has been hinting at is that there is a little bit more to it even in this game.
So if we get it. So we get into some spoiler territory and actually explore farther into the game. First of all, like, confronting that monster and turning it off isn't quite the message. Like, so you find ways of hurting it to make it go away, but those are clearly painful to do for the main character. She finds, like, this light image of herself, and she has to bond with it, but she's screaming the whole time. And it's painful, and it's a slow process of, like, turning this beam onto the monster. And then when you have enough beams on it, it damages the shell. The monster tells you that, you know, it's trying to help you, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And then it goes away, and you have light, and you feel good for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And then you move into the next section, and you start confronting something else. Like her guilt over not paying attention to her brother being abused by kids at school. It's an entire section where her brother is portrayed as a giant bird who is sorrow and makes its way around the map as you chase it and try to come across your own memories and realizing that you were distracted as a, you know, like teenager while your younger brother is being abused and trying to tell you and you're not hearing the message in the time.
Yeah.
And coming back to it later and then realizing that you feel bad about all that. So that's like one monster that you encounter, but, and so you go through, you fix it, you make your brother human again, and he gets to go on this nice boat, and you can no longer understand him, because you're still a monster, you're still other.
Yeah.
So the next section is basically trying to fix your parents, who had a dysfunctional relationship, they didn't see eye to eye, your father traveled for work or something, but he always felt pressured at home, and mother was always stressed out, she felt abandoned. She felt the stress of having to raise two children on her own. And the whole next section is just about you taking away all that pain, like, and making it so that you fixing them so that they can be happy together. And then finishing that, they go off on the boat and you still are broken, and you still don't understand why you can't make it. So you get to the final island. There's a section that deals with one of the best parts. I showed you guys the trailer. There's this big white wolf with blue eyes in this snowy area, and he's not like the other monsters because he's white, until she goes to try and hug him because he is the embodiment of her boyfriend, Jack. When she goes to hug him, it breaks the snow mask. Mm-hmm. And you see the black wolf underneath, like the monster that was hiding behind the mask, trying to project a happy-go-lucky person. Mm-hmm. And he lashes out at you for breaking his mask. She tries to fix him. So as you go through this whole thing and you are fixing all these people, you keep... And Hannah, you saw this. Like, you go to clear the corruption, right?
Yeah.
You hold up your hand and there's a little light and it draws all the corruption off of them. And it goes into your backpack.
Yeah.
Because the whole time she's doing this, she's just taking on everybody else's problems and making them her own and trying mm-hmm. to carry them on her own. And that's, she thinks she's fixing everyone. She thinks she's making everything better for herself, but she's just making it worse by trying to take on all these problems.
Literally carrying everyone's
everything.
Load.
Yeah. Like it's this ongoing metaphor that doesn't really start becoming clear until you get to the end, because her backpack's getting bigger, but it's just so incremental. You don't see it mm-hmm. throughout the game until you get to the end. And somebody says, her boyfriend mentions something about the backpack, and she's like, have I been carrying this the whole time? And it's about learning to, at the end, share that, to be able to accept that you have it, but to also let others in and mm-hmm. to be more open about everything. It's how you get through the end of the game and mm-hmm. eventually find your way to a place where she can be human again. No, it's just, it's so good.
So that's the part that your therapist wants to talk about next week. Noted.
Maybe. So yeah, no, it's real good. Because Jack is going through his own issues and he doesn't know. And he keeps pushing you away. And yeah, again, it's all the symbolism in this game is just so on point and so impactful.
I'm excited to play through it. I'm excited to play through it with you so that we can get around the freaking game mechanics that I don't like.
I understand.
Yeah.
The game mechanic thing, I think that is definitely personal, like, yeah. preference. Like, I could absolutely see how that could get annoying quickly. I do like it from a metaphorical perspective and, like, that forcing you to have patience and that, you know, those sections of the journey where you have to go slower. I kind of like it, but at the same time, I could also see from just straight-up gameplay, which you, even in story games, you absolutely have to think about because it is a interactive medium that you're playing through. I could see how it could get really frustrating.
I think I would like it if it had changed from section to section, if it weren't
a little more varied.
Going from the sea, waiting for the monster to pass so that I can get to the next spot, instead sure. maybe... I don't know, vary up how it is. Maybe it's the same monster, but it's a different version of sure. what you're trying to avoid. I think I would have enjoyed that more, but again, that's very personal preference.
It does change a little bit. Like, when you're going after your father to try and deal with him, you're climbing a tower. So the things you're dealing with in the tower are just, it's not like jump puzzles, it's just like making sure you jump the gaps in the broken support he has for himself.
It's more of a, like, mobility.
Yeah, sort of. And it's dealing with vents that keep gusting, so it's like timing that to get around the outbursts. It's just, you know.
You're right about the symbolism.
Right?
That's a little, that hits a little too close to home.
Oh, I feel that.
Yeah, no, same. I don't know if I could actually play through that section. That's a little...
It's just done as, like, hot bursts of air that are coming mm-hmm. out from these things for sustained periods, and they never... I don't know, for me... it never felt like the timing was right on it. Like, I just couldn't get into a feel with it, so I was always second-guessing it. And I'm sure they went for the same amount of time. It's just the amount of time just seemed off enough that it didn't fall in with my own rhythms.
Yeah.
So I was kept uneasy by it.
I was like, wow, I'm going to hold this part for later and play this back later for you. It's fine. It's fine, Charles.
Charles, I am not currently in therapy right now. Maybe we should not talk about this because I'm starting to feel some stuff. Even watching that small section of the game with the brother, I was feeling some stuff that I was not prepared to feel yeah. at the moment. So
this is a game that is absolutely going to make you feel things. When I joke around about how when I die, it's going to be because I play a game like this on VR and I'm going to cry so hard that it short circuits a VR helmet on my brain. This is one of those games. This is not a game for everybody. In no way will I be insulted if you listen to this and say, I am not going to play that game because I super get it. But those of you that do, that may want to explore that message of loneliness and depression and the journey that somebody goes through in these dark moments in their lives, I think that it's rewarding for that. Even if you don't necessarily, haven't gone through this yourself, right? If you don't have a brother that has gone through traumatic moments, if you didn't have parents that weren't emotionally stable, if you didn't go through that, you can still do this and empathize with this character and, yeah, and those feelings. So I don't know. I liked it of what I've played so far. I want to play through the rest, but it is heavy for sure.
I think one of my hardest parts about it was going through it and seeing what I knew she should do and her not doing that. And you can see where that was the decision she was going to make in the moment and just being like, oh God, that's not what you should be doing. Oh, this is not going to go well. Cause yeah, that's also how that works. Like in the moment is while you're in the middle of things, having that outside clarity doesn't exist. So still so much with the symbolism and the storytelling being on point.
I do like that though, because I think that it's very cool that a game can give you those moments of reflection. Because you can part of that comes from experience, right? Like, yeah, you recognize that she's making the wrong decision because these are things that happen. There's some shared experiences or even some unique individual experiences. But if it's the kind of thing you've gone through, you can recognize it and be like, oh, this is totally the wrong decision. And it's easier to say that about what someone else is doing and then when you're doing it.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I this is one of the reasons why I really love the idea of games as a therapeutic tool, because I think that there are really important things that are easier to process through something like this, or sometimes harder to process, or sometimes just as hard to process. But I mean, if it's legitimate, like, you, just the way that you described that section with, like, the outbursts and, like, timing and getting around them, like, if I was in therapy, that's probably something I'd take to my therapist and be like, man, this game put this thing in a way that I never really thought about before, but oh man, was that ever a huge part of something that I've lived through? Like, that's absolutely a part of my life that really fucking sucked. And I never thought of it in the terms of like a mobility puzzle game, but that's so totally what it was, both in action and emotion. So yeah, games that can do that are special and really important.
Yep. Okay, so I'm going to pivot slightly. We have one last topic to get through. And more on an emotional moment and decisions after we made. Hannah, you brought this up just, like, very lightly. The question about Blizzard.
Yeah, so we're starting to run a little bit low on time, so I really don't want to go into the whole deal. If you are listening to this, you are probably aware that fairly recently a streamer on one of Blizzard's Asian streams, it was a Hearthstone regional, it was a Hearthstone tournament, and a player named Blitzchung wore a gas mask and goggles seen on the Hong Kong protesters and made a pro-Hong Kong comment. Blizz initially suspended him and, banned him and took away his prize money. Also, an aside, fired both of the broadcasters on the stream.
Yeah, the shoutcasters got hit with it too.
Yeah, who literally ducked down behind the desk when the comment was made because they didn't want to get in trouble, and they got fired. Fired in that Blizzard said we will not work with them again. Huge outcry. Blizzard's TOS, in my opinion, is written in a way that whatever they need it to be, they can justify it being. So they can be like, oh, well, he broke the TOS and this is why it happened. Huge outcry. A very bipartisan letter was sent to Activision Blizzard from a bunch of different politicians. Blizz backed down a little bit in that it changed the suspension, or they changed the ban to a shorter suspension, did return the prize money. The Shoutcasters are still blacklisted, so I feel real bad for those guys.
I thought that they were given, they were also given a 6-month suspension. Theirs changed. They're not.
Did it? Yeah. I did not read about theirs getting changed.
I did.
Changed.
There's,
okay.
There's
good.
A 6-month suspension as well.
I don't think that they should have been punished at all because they had absolutely no control over
the
situation. Like
they didn't like,
they
orchestrate
literally
it.
Hid. They literally like, they immediately ducked down, and when the one guy went to like look to see if it was over, the other guy leaned over and like pulled his head back down and was like, no, bro, we're not out of this yet. They should not have been punished at all. No one in this situation should have been punished, but they specifically had no control over anything. So what Blizzard did is a big conversation for another time, but what I really wanted to talk to you two about is that my personal moral dilemma in this, I do not support Blizzard's decision. I do support democracy and freedom for Hong Kong. I am currently subscribed to WoW for the first time in kind of a long time. I am playing WoW Classic. I am having some real heavy stuff go on in real life right now. And WoW Classic has actually been a very good way of making me feel a lot better. It is a world that I am extremely familiar with. It is nostalgic and very comforting to me. Like literally I have a playlist of like get to sleep music, and a bunch of tracks on it are just like Nelf music because it like takes me back to a time that I really like. I find it very relaxing. So playing WoW is a lot of fun. Eric and I play together. It is a thing that is good for my mental health. At the same time, I feel like a complete piece of shit for giving Blizzard money and implicitly supporting their product by continuing to give them money and playing. So what I was wondering is, where does the line fall? Where do you have to stand up and say, I'm not going to support a company with my dollar anymore, but then also be like, I'm kind of cutting off my nose to spite my face, right? Because I know if I stop supporting this, I'm going to lose a thing that has been good for me.
That has to be done by the individual. There's no way that I can draw a line and say this is where it stands, because it depends on every unique person and their situation and what they're going through. There's no fair way to anyone make that line for anyone's call except for themselves. If I were in the same situation, I'm not in that situation, so I can't say for you. I think I was never interested in playing WoW Classic, so for me it wasn't a big deal to not be, you know, supporting WoW, or really supporting much of Blizzard in any way.
It's like,
but
you were barely interested in it when it wasn't WoW Classic and it was just WoW.
Excuse me, sir. I played the beta before you did and got all the way to, no, I played a little bit past Burning Crusade, and then I was like, wow, this is another job. I'm out.
Let me rephrase it then. What if, BioWare.
Right. Yes. If it were, I would have to say, for me, I would probably stop playing, but that's me, right? Like that's, I can say that, because I have other support networks.
Sure.
I have other outlets. I have other things that I can do, and I'm in a different headspace and in a different everything.
Like it was easier for me because I was only just like starting to get back into Hearthstone because of like some of the new expansion they put in, like new solo missions and stuff. I was like, oh, this is fun. Like there's some new mechanics and stuff. Cool. Oh, really? Okay. Well, I guess I'm done playing Hearthstone.
I guess what I was trying to put out there was not so much a judgment of like my personal situation, like my personal situation is my thing, whatever. But just more of like kind of a thoughtfulness of when do you draw the line supporting a company when they are putting out something that means a lot to you? Cause I think that is a really hard question because I think it's very hard to, I think it's very hard, especially because we were just talking about games that are important to us, right? Or that make us feel things that are important, or games that act as therapeutic tools, or in my case, like escapism and comfort, kind of like comfort food, right?
Yeah.
So like, it's really hard to draw that line and figure out like, when do you do? And I guess it's even a bigger topic of like, even outside of gaming of like, you know,
vote with your dollar, right?
Right.
Yeah.
But at the same time, like that, especially in the way that our society is set up, can be incredibly challenging, right? Like, sometimes you don't want to support, like, Walmart Right? Like, yeah. There, I know plenty of people who are forced to shop at Walmart because the prices are so low and they can't afford to shop at somewhere better. But at the same time, they don't support what Walmart does, and, like, yeah, they don't support their practices.
Wasn't this kind of like the premise of season 3 of The Good Place?
A little bit, yeah, that the world has gotten so complicated that, like, every choice that you make is laden with so many consequences that you're completely unaware of.
Yeah.
That it becomes incredibly difficult to be a good person.
Yeah. I mean, I would say you're talking about all of this with Blizzard, but EA has a part in this, and EA is definitely in Fallen Order and involved in Dragon Age and involved in a lot of things. So there's, I can't say that I'm not a part of this same conversation.
The number of people who went, oh, well, fuck you, Blizzard. I'm going to go play League of Legends or, you know, go over to Riot. And Riot is entirely Chinese owned.
And Riot has also made quite a few bad decisions.
Yes. I think the first thing that comes to mind, I have a poster from Anita Sarkeesian that is, be critical of the media that you love. So my first thought is, you are aware, be aware of the media that you are consuming and that you are a part of, and you know what decisions they are making, and you know who's involved in the situation. Be educated first. When you are making recommendations to others, know that you also need to preface with that information on who's involved and what's happening.
I think that's an incredibly good point.
Right? Like, yeah. I love the Dragon Age series, but boy, howdy, am I going to think a lot about Crunch and a lot of the shit that has been come out, you know, been coming out of stories of what happened with BioWare and Anthem and things before I make a recommendation of when the next Dragon Age comes out. Like, that is going to be a huge part of my thought process and what I say to other people. I think that your investment in your dollars is one thing, but also your voice is very important.
Yeah, so I just wanted to chime in on that, because I think that there is merit in being critical of a company that puts out a product you love. Specifically because what you don't want is the company to fail. You want the company to get better.
That's very true.
So, like, just straight, like, don't buy their stuff. Don't ever deal with them. Just, like, cut them all out is just to get the company to fail. And that's not your end goal.
A little bit. It's also, I mean, companies have a bottom line, right? It does generally come down to money. In the case of Blizzard, it very clearly, again, from I think where most of us are sitting, comes down to money, no matter how much they protest that it doesn't come down to Chinese business. That's a pretty clear impact into what's going on. But I think you're very right in that. Dirkade intern number four?
Four.
Number four has some opinions as well.
Has some opinions about Hong Kong. Especially if Hong Kong was me rubbing his belly too much.
No, China was you rubbing his belly too much. His belly is Hong Kong. He is pro-Hong Kong.
Hi, buddy.
Stop interfering with my belly. I mean, Hong Kong.
Democracy for my belly. I mean, Hong Kong.
I don't know what this metaphor is anymore.
But you're right. I do think it, I think it is very important that, you know, this is not a case of, like, I don't want Blizzard to fail. Blizzard has been a company that has been a big part of a lot of people's lives, and I've had friends that work at Blizzard, and, like, at one point in time, I very badly wanted to work for Blizzard. Although I will say through this entire thing at some point in time that I do a lot of PR in my line of work, and a lot of PR outreach and stuff like that. My husband asked me, if you were a PR person for Blizzard and they asked you what to do in this situation, like in response to this, or they asked you what you would think to do, or they asked you to do this thing, I was like, oh no, I'd quit. No, I wouldn't work for, I would be like, this is what you should do. If you're not going to do that, I'm out. Sorry. Bye.
How do I graphically explain backpedaling?
Well, I mean, from a PR perspective, the very first thing they should have done was not put him on a stream. They should just not have put anybody on a stream. This was something that they could have seen coming, particularly because he was already wearing protester apparel. It would have been very easy to just be like, we're not going to do competitor interviews this time. And then we'll just avoid this entirely. And yeah, it will be fine. And that would have been the right move. But anyway. Well, thank you both very much. It was just kind of something, like, I've been dealing with and thinking about a lot lately. This is the first year that I have not bought the e-ticket to BlizzCon in kind of a long time, actually. Which is a little sad, because I think it's going to be a big shit show, and I wanted to watch it, but...
Well, you got a mobile phone,
I'm so... like, I need that update on Diablo Immortal.
No, they're almost certainly announcing D4.
I hope so.
Almost certainly. But I'm very curious if it's going to get wildly overshadowed by other things.
Yeah, no, I think, be critical, and if boycotting is part of that, then, feel free to engage in that. But also make sure to support them when they... are doing things right. So, like, if they see that they did something wrong and that they understand that this is, even if it's just for financial political motives, get on the right path, you can be like, okay, better. Hope this was a learning moment.
Write them a letter. Write them a civil letter. It's so easy, as somebody who works in social media, it's so easy for people internally to dismiss anybody who is being wildly using slurs and anybody going like crazy over the top, and no matter how passionate you are, but if you can at least write a civil letter that is explaining your frustration and your disappointment mm-hmm. and what you would love to see happen, that is so much easier for them to consume and to escalate. But make your opinion known, like more than I would say, like more than just canceling a subscription, like that's that, and that is an option as well. But it depends on, again, you and your personal circumstance. Nobody should feel bad about their decision, but you should be educated about what's happening and then make your opinion known and share it with your both that company and your friends and anybody you're talking to about this game.
And in the game, too, because I actually have had so far I've had groups with people where it's been mentioned and they've been like, what's going on? And like being able to like give them that information and then them being like, oh, I didn't know that was happening. I'm going to go look that up. This might actually change the way that I do things or if I continue my subscription. Yeah. So I think that's another really, really good point. I've also was told ever since I was a kid, my parents are both very, they boycott a lot of things. boycott doesn't matter if they know that you're, if they don't know you're boycotting it, right? So, like, if you cancel your subscription, sure, cancel your subscription and write in that little box why you're canceling your subscription. Cancel your subscription and send an email and say, this is why I did this.
Yep.
Because otherwise it's just lost in a sea of data. Like, Blizzard has millions of customers. They, they're maybe... there are trends, certainly, but make those trends very easily identifiable. Say, I did this because you guys did this, and I won't come back until this happens.
Yep.
Well, thank you both very much for processing that with me. I appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thank Dorcadia intern number 4 for his thoughts as well.
He's now passed out on the couch. So
he says this entire situation has been a success. He's calling a victory. He says, I am not boycotting petting. Please continue to pet me.
Yep, his belly got extra rubs. It's all good. Okay, we will have probably less serious topics next time.
Yeah, no promises, though.
that's also very true.
I mean, I'm only a couple hours into Outer Worlds, but I don't think it's going to be this serious.
Not quite as serious. I do want to talk about Greedfall and playing that as well. So we'll get more into that later. So again, thank you for joining us. You can catch us at Dorcadia.com, at Dorcadia on most social medias, iTunes, Stitcher, Google Music. We are on Mixer. Please give us a rating. We would like 5 out of 5 whats.
That's too many deep emotional journeys. So
yeah, let's not go on that many.
I cannot deep handle that journeys. Many. I can barely handle the one.
I would like -2 deep emotional journeys. So maybe
we've had this for a few years. I think it's been one journey is enough.
Yes, 5 rad ass lightsabers.
Yes, please. Oh man, I was
because we only have one right now, and I would like one as well.
Yeah, we need more lightsabers.
We need more rad ass.
So you guys get lightsabers, and then I get Ahsoka's 2 lightsabers, and then
Dorkitty in turn gets a little vibro saber.
Yeah, that's it. We're that's it. I'm cool with that. Yes, please.
Works for me.
All right. Thanks, everyone.
Bye-bye.